Wait a minute. Okay, last speaker before the coffee break is Amy Miracle. I'm WACM PMC simulations of long-term trends of PMCs.
Okay, so it's hard to come off of a talk like Uva's. So I'll do my best, but everything he promised you that I was going to show, I'm not showing. So he's got to let me know beforehand. So I'm going to talk about WACM PMC simulations of long-term trends. As a heads up, we started putting PMC primerization into WACM PMC around 05, I think it was. And we made great headway and got all the way to where we were doing great science, and then our funding ran out. So Dan and I have not been able to work on this for a couple years. So this is going to be a review. And then in the last couple days, I tried to do some fast data analysis, and so we have something new to show. But that's where we're at. Okay, so we're going to do a review of what WACM PMC is, review the PMC bulk primerization in it, a little bit of validation, 30-year run comparing to SPUV. So those two bullets, and then the start of our attribution study and conclusions. Okay, so as we see it, there's 3D, different approaches to 3D PMC modeling. We just heard an excellent talk by Uva, who uses Lima ICE, and that's Lagrangian scheme coupled with a GCM. We have our model, which is WACM PMC, and that's a chemistry climate model, WACM, with a bulk PMC primerization. And then there's WACM Karma, which Chuck Bardeen has been leading up, and that's the chemistry climate model with sectional microphysics. So there's three different approaches, and each has its own advantages and drawbacks. So our approach is that we took a chemistry climate model, WACM, and we put in a bulk primerization. So we only model ice density. This is similar to what Dave Siskin did with NRL, the 2D simulations. And so back when we were putting this in, we kind of followed what he did and then tried to see if we could make it a little bit better. So ice in WACM is transported by 3D winds. We have growth and sublimation and sedimentation. And this is all based on the effective radius, which the effective radius is parameterized, which I'll get into. We have a two-way coupled modification of water vapor feeds back into the chemistry and radiation and therefore dynamics. It includes trends in water vapor and other greenhouse gases. It's a free-running model, so can't do exact year-to-year comparisons with this model, but we make sure that the bulk characteristics of PMCs are reproduced. And we don't model dust. So this is intended, reason we did it this way is we intended it for long iterations for solar cycle and trends. And it was cheaper to run than a sectional microphysics code. However, it still takes a while to run because we increase the altitude resolution in the mesosphere and things like that. Because it's a free running model, we're able to do attribution studies. We're able to isolate different greenhouse gases and then try to look at the effect on the clouds. And so we don't force with lower boundary conditions in this version. Okay. So the bulk PMC primerization, what we do is we calculate Q, which is in WACM, condensation minus evaporation or sublimation, and that feeds back into advective and diffusive tendencies. So for PMCs, Q is the sum of two microphysical processes, the nucleation and growth. So we followed Siskind, and what they did is they said, okay, if saturation gets above a certain level, put so much of the available water into ice, we actually separated out nucleation and growth rate. So that was an improvement to what he did, but the nucleation scheme is the same. We have about 0.001% per hour if the saturation gets above 30. And then if saturation's below 30, we don't put any water into ice. So we don't model dust or nucleation, we parameterize it. Q growth, so a requirement for any bulk primerization is that there's a reasonable amount of mean ice mass, which depends on the particle growth rate. So we have microphysics in the code in WACM. We have a growth rate, as you can see here. Growth rates depending on the area, the ice, the density of ice, the density of the surrounding atmosphere, and then the growth rate. So the growth rate is from Gadsden. And then what we do is we move ice mass, or we move ice around, but then at every time step, we put it into an radius. And so we can grow and supplement it at each time step. And then we put it back in the ice and move it around. So that parameterization is what I'll talk about next. Okay, so to get that parameterization, what we wanted is a, what Dave did in his Chem2D model is put all the ice into a 40 nanometer size, I think it was 40. But we wanted a distribution of ice particles in R so that we could adequately grow and supplement them. So what we did is we found a reference, Budala et al. 2002, where they fit in situ tropospheric cirrus cloud data and found that a cirrus cloud particle radius could be parameterized using the local temperature and ice water content following this equation. So we figured PMCs are pretty similar to tropospheric cirrus clouds, and we adopted this relationship, and then we set out to define this parameter space. So we then ran KARMA. And so we took WACM and we followed all these trajectories around and got temperature curtains. And we ran those through KARMA. Thank you. We ran these through KARMA and got, I'll flip back and forth between these slides. So this is an example temperature curtain through KARMA, right? Temperature, the resulting ice water content, and effective radius coming out of KARMA. And then we basically ran lots of temperature curtains, got the relationship between these three to fill this parameter space. Okay, so this is the parameter space, the KARMA temperature, ice water content, and the colored contours are effective radius. This is our, then using this, can you guys even see that? No. Equation, we come up with the parameterization space. And then we validated it with SOFI data. Okay, so then you can see here that we're going to need a different one. This is feeding ice water content and effective radius into the parameterization effective radius. You can see that it follows the true effective radius very well. You can, you know, calculate backscatter coefficient, albedo. Black is what KARMA is predicting. Blue is the albedo from the parameterized effective radius. So this is what we published in 09 and put into WACM. Okay, thank you. Chuck came to the rescue, I think. There we go, okay. All right, so and we put that parameterization in and we ran WACM PMC for 30 years to be consistent with the published SPV record. So then we went through validation. You know, are we getting the bulk PMC properties correct with this parameterization? So this is temperature, latitude is on your x-axis and all these. And so you can see, and then this is pressure. So you have temperature, water vapor, right? You see the increase in water vapor below the cloud. You see growth rate, you see sublimation and growth. And then right in the middle is the S equal 1 curve. So feel like we're getting growth rate right, mass is consistent, effective radius seems to be consistent, and I don't know if we've ever validated number density, but all these are consistent as far as a zonal mean bulk parameterization. We also compared to sectional microphysics, so we compared to Chuck's 2009 paper and WACM KARMA. WACM KARMA is the red. All the other colors are different years of WACM PMC. And what we're looking for, well, it's a free-running model. Every single year is going to be different, but the bulk properties are there. Also, we compare to observations. So this is from Mike Stevens' 2007 paper versus latitude. This is ice mass in tons per 5-degree latitude in the north and the south. And this seems to be consistent as far as magnitude goes with what he predicted for the snowy ice mass. So then we can look at trends, okay? So we have 30 years. This is Whackum PMC ice mass. This is for the entire season, okay? This is in the total amount of ice per season, okay, from 1978 to 2008, about. This is all the mass. There's no thresholding on this. This is broken up into latitudes, okay, north versus south. You can just see by eye with all the ice in there that Whackum PMC is predicting a trend, right? Then we can do a multilinear regression on this and get all the solar and trend components, solar cycle and long-term trend. The bottom line is that we see a very strong solar cycle component. We see a very strong trend component in the north, in the southern hemisphere showing very little trend and much more variability. So then we can calculate albedo. So we assume a Gaussian distribution of 12 nanometers. We calculate albedo for the SBB wavelength. We can calculate it for any wavelength. In this instant, we calculate it at 265, the SIPS, AIM-SIPS wavelength. We did it at a constant scattering angle, which is an average over the SBV observations. But I think in this case, this albedo was calculated with the parameters for SIPS, okay? And then thresholds can be applied. But what the real message of this figure is that we're not comparing this exactly day to day because it's a free-running model. But this is the ice or the albedo maps that we get for every single day. And then we average them up. And they look, you know, ballpark similar to our best observations spatially. So then, now this is at Whackum 252 nanometers, so similar to SBV, 120 degrees scattering angle, and no thresholds. And these are the trend coefficients. I did not put the error bars on here, but they are all significant. And so clouds are brighter in the northern hemisphere, as predicted by Whackum PMC, and but there's no trend in the southern hemisphere, but more variability. So this is, it's not new, I mean, but this is what Whackum PMC is predicting. We didn't do anything fancy. We just put in a bulk parameterization of PMCs, and we got a trend that looks similar to SPV. So then we can apply the thresholds, right, for different latitudes. As specified by Matt DeLand, these are the thresholds that we use per latitude. These are the trends, coefficients coming out of the regression analysis. This is Whackum PMC. You can see that they're very similar. And it's very interesting that Lima ICE, with a totally different approach, gets very similar trends to SPV. And we can definitely learn something from that, I think, once we compare. Okay, so this is frequency. So this is what I did a couple days ago, was I converted it to a frequency. I used the same albedo thresholds as before. And we get more of a frequency trend in PMCs. However, I played around with thresholds, and you can definitely change this number. You can definitely change the absolute value of the frequency by just increasing your threshold value of what clouds you include in a frequency. So, but bottom line is we get a trend in the frequency also. Southern hemisphere, just for the sake of completeness, looks very similar to SBV. SBV is predicting more of a trend. Now, this doesn't include any of the new data, right? This is just to what was published for, DeLand 2007. So it's going to be interesting to eventually run the model out and see what happens if we get these dissecting trends, whatever. So the other thing I did a couple days ago was analyze the thresholds. So this is something I've wanted to do for a long time. So basically what I did is the rightmost or leftmost panel here, rightmost depending on where you're looking at it. So this is the threshold albedo, okay, and these dots are the 5.5, 6.5, and 7.5 SBV albedo thresholds per latitude band. So these are the designated latitude bands. And then this is the trend coming out of the regression analysis. And these are the error bars coming out for that coefficient. And if you say, okay, everything greater than zero, so basically all the clouds, and then you do the trend analysis and you get an answer, right? And then you progressively say, okay, less than one, less or greater than one, greater than two, greater than three. So you get you progressively get rid of all the dim clouds, all right? And then you get to the prescribed SPUV albedo thresholds, and then you keep going. And this looks like as you get rid of the dim clouds, the trend goes down, right? But I want to look at the other way. I want to isolate just the dim clouds. So now we do less than. So everything less than one, everything less than two. And progressively go up. And there's, according to Whackham PMC, doesn't look like there's much of a trend in the dim clouds at all. Okay, so this gives you a different picture depending on how you apply thresholds, right? So there's hardly any trend in the dim clouds, and then progressively goes up and basically flatlines until you get to a constant trend once you get up to the bright clouds. But, you know, there's brighter clouds in SPUV, but just, you know, you get to a point that it doesn't matter, you know, how bright the clouds are. It's just going to be the same trend. So I thought that was really an interesting result and shows that there's very little trend in the dim clouds, according to Whackham PMC. And then this is the full season. So I also did it with a middle of the season to see if there was a difference. This kind of follows on from the conversation we had this morning. So in the peak of the season, you get the same threshold variation, right? The actual magnitude of the trend when you're looking at all the clouds decreases or increases a little bit, but I don't think it's significant. So it looks like using peak of the season or all the season, as far as Whackham PMC goes, it doesn't look like it makes a difference, and that it thresholds definitely matter, I think, when you're looking at trends. Okay, so conclusions one. Whackham PMC is a good resource for solar cycle and trend studies. We have validation. We did a 30-year simulation looking at ice mass and albedo. We see very little trend in the northern hemisphere and a significant, you know, statistically significant trend in the northern hemisphere. We reproduce the SPUV trend. PMC detection thresholds are important, and that Whackham PMC indicates no trend in the dimmed clouds. But we need to extend the model to come up to date with what Matt and Mike are doing. So, okay. So now I'm going to move on to attribution studies. All right. So from my point of view, all the trend analysis and solar cycle analysis, right, is all from correlation. And that gives you a positive link or a non-positive link, but it doesn't really tell you anything about the mechanism unless you do attribution studies. So I want to know, how sensitive are the clouds to methane, carbon dioxide, CFCs? These are the questions I want to know, and I think all you want to know too. So this is where we're headed. We're not there yet because we haven't been able to continue with this study, however we want to. So it's a challenge to test a particular forcing in a climate system because the response is nonlinear. So you have to set up control simulations to study the variability of the climate system to a particular forcing by running perpetual simulations. And you have to run those over and over and over again to beat out the natural variability to get to the true response of what you're trying to identify as what's the force. So the advantage of Whackham PMC is the ability to use it for attribution studies. So we can hold a greenhouse gas constant and investigate temperature, water, PMC mass, and anything else you want to look at. But you know, that's what I'm going to show you today, its response. So we ran five cases. What we did is we ran a control case at 1983 and a control case at 2003. The reason we picked this is it seemed like they were pretty consistent in the solar cycle year, and so that's why we chose 83 and 2003. So we ran 1983, just that year, with all the greenhouse gas conditions for that year over and over again, Well, we ran 10 years. But you have to throw out 2 years for spin up, okay? So we have 8 years right now. I think statistically, that's not enough. We need to run it out even more to really beat down the natural variability. But this is what we have, okay? We also, and we ran 2003, the same 10 years. Then we held methane, carbon dioxide, and CFCs at 1983 concentrations. So we ran 2003 still, but we held each one of these constant to see, or to 1983 conditions, to see if we could perturb it back to 83 conditions. What could perturb 2003 back to 1983? Okay, and our motivation to look at CFCs stems from work that Ann Smith did and has been followed up by a number of people, but that the impact of the ozone hole and the CFCs affecting ozone, and this can go right into you know, what Uwe was just talking about with ozone and stuff, but CFCs can affect the ozone through chlorine. So our attribution study, this is just to convince you that we held these things back constant. So this is methane in July, and each one of these colors is a different control case. I apologize if it's an eye chart for the people in the back. Control 2003 is dark blue. Control 1983 is light blue. So you can see the difference in methane between those two. And then CFC is red, methane is yellow, and green is carbon dioxide. So in this case, we held methane back to 1983 conditions, and you can see it goes right over, okay? Carbon dioxide, the same, right? We get it back. CFC is the same. So this is just to show you that we see it in the attributes, or in the, you know, variables that we want, that we held it back to 1983. So the temperature response in the stratosphere, okay? This is July and January. This is on a log pressure altitude. I didn't do geometric, but I have it, so we can look at it that way too. So this is 40 kilometers up to 55 kilometers, and you can see that we're trying to get back to the light blue. We're going from dark blue to light blue, and the closest, as far as stratospheric temperatures go, are CFCs and CO2, but neither of them by themselves get there. Temperature response in the mesosphere, okay? Pretty constant up until you get higher in altitude, between 90 and 95 kilometers. Light blue again here. The closest that gets to 1983 conditions is CFCs and carbon dioxide in this case. But neither of them get, you know, neither of them are the smoking gun by themselves. PMC ice mass response, okay? Light blue again, 83. We're trying to get from dark blue down to light blue. The closest is CFCs, right? Carbon dioxide and methane don't cut it. CFCs seem to be closest. However, in the south, it's a different story. Both 2003 and 83 control runs are kind of right on top of each other, and CFCs explain both of those better than carbon dioxide and methane. Water vapor. You can see down in the lower atmosphere that when we change the methane yellow, it's right on top of the 83 conditions. That's what we expect. We want that to happen. But when you get up to the sublimation level of the cloud, right, where you see this peak in water vapor, none of them agree, right? Because you have sublimation processes. So it's just not, it's just nonlinear. So it's just not clear. However, carbon dioxide, well, anyway. Did I say methane? Yeah, methane, okay, sorry. All right, so my conclusions. So I think attribution studies are very important to define the sensitivity of PMCs to greenhouse gas drivers. I think WACC and PMC is a really good resource to do this type of study. So far, and what we have, there's no smoking gun. It's definitely a combination of forces. It has to be. We want to explore this further. However, this study shows that PMCs are clearly sensitive to greenhouse gases. So even though none of those were a smoking gun, none of them were exactly the same as the 2003 simulation, right? They all varied depending on what you forced. This also showed that PMCs are sensitive to to CFCs and has the potential to be the driving force. Neither CO2 or methane can explain the PMC trends by themselves, but clearly PMCs are sensitive to them. So future work. You know, we want to keep going with this. We need to process more years to get our statistics down. You saw I didn't have any statistics on there because we haven't done the statistical analysis of whether these are even statistical trends yet. I think we need more years. So that's what we're going to propose to do. So thank you.
Okay. Questions, comments? Here.
Why do you think that you were never able to go from 2003 back all the way back down to 1983? Seems like there was something else that's missing. I mean, when you put CFCs and you put everything in, it's still not back to where you want it, right?
Well, we held one at a time constant to 83 conditions.
You didn't put them all together.
No, well, that's what the 83 control case is. It has all of them for 83 okay. conditions. All right. All of them for 2003 conditions. And then we took 2003 and held one of them at a time to 83 to see if any one of those would bring it back. There's definitely other methods to do this. This is the way we chose to do it.
Different questions? Just answered my question.
Okay. Really? Nothing?
Okay. Anybody else? Everyone's that anxious for coffee. Movie's still good.
Yes, Amy, great talk. And one question is, I saw your scattering of your seasonal means in comparison to the SBOV data. And my impression was that the model data had much larger scatter compared to the observations. Generally, I would expect the opposite. So the model variability is larger than nature. And as an information, I expected this question for my talk, because in Lima, it's the same.
Is it?
No? So don't be afraid. Maybe. So what happens here?
Yeah, I don't know. Do you have a guess?
Yeah.
I'll have you answer your own question.
Perhaps you show again this comparison, this one slide, because it's really impressive.
Are you talking about the southern
with the 30 years as right?
This one?
For example, no, this is north.
You want south?
You're right.
South?
This one.
Yeah. Yes.
Wacom PMC. No, the other one. Sorry, this is southern. Southern is not so remarkable. Yes, the northern hemisphere.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, for example, if you're looking to the left, see the original SBOV, no, which are much smoother compared to the model, and the same is in Lima, and I'm wondering why. Because generally, no, model results are smoother, yeah, because we need more variability, but so, yeah,
and
it's interesting to see.
Some of this could be for thresholds too. I think thresholds could play a little
threshold,
bit of part.
No, but
I do. I mean, just looking at these different trends and how you threshold it, but you're right. It doesn't get rid of the scatter.
What is interesting for me that you use these bulk parametrization, because you want to calculate hundreds of years, and it's only possible with the quick parametrization to do that. And we are doing this Lagrange technique with a million of particles, and we see the same. No?
Yeah.
So there is something behind.
I agree.
Okay. Perhaps you have an idea why?
I was happy at LPMR 2009 to see this, and I'm still happy. It means I'm doing something right, I guess. I don't have an immediate answer for why there would be more variability in the models, the model results. It's a very interesting point.
Dan, you have something to say?
Maybe it's in the magic of your correction.
Oh, by the way, this is all local times. This is not filtered by local time at all. So, you know, with all local times in there, you get a trend. And no shuttle exhaust either. Sorry, Mike.
Inherently there is some smoothing in the sense that I'm referencing things to a specific local time, and I'm trying to, the local time adjustment is intended to take out the two-phase aspect of how the data are sampled. So in a sense it's smoothing, but I don't have knowledge of all of the shape that goes into it. I'm definitely approximating a lot. I'm guessing it, the overall shape to come up with
that. But our albedo variability has all the local times So we have the diurnal cycle as part of the variability.
Mm-hmm.
And you've removed that diurnal cycle variability by mapping it onto a single local time.
So maybe it's
the fact that we're seeing the diurnal cycle is adding to the albedo noise.
Maybe. That's a good something to check.
Okay. One more.
Okay, I think it's striking that the trends in the model and in the data increase with latitude. And I remember Dave Siskin's talk. Is Dave around? Remember your argument that you made is that you expect a greater sensitivity when you're closer to the threshold. Right, and that's totally wrong.
That's totally wrong.
And so the question is, why is the sensitivity just opposite of what you'd expect?
It's wrong in two ways, because it also argued that the South.
It's wrong in two ways because it also argued that the South should show greater trends in variability than the North, and that's also exactly the opposite of what Amy shows, because the South was always more borderline. You know, there was always less clouds. So it's failed as a function of latitude and as a function of hemisphere.
Right. So what's the answer? What's the answer?
Oh. Why there's a latitude variation?
Yeah. In the trend.
Maybe it's related to the bright clouds. You know?
Well, here's the thing, is at some point they all are about the same. Right? Different latitudes, different thresholds once you get to the brightest clouds. So it's just, I think that there's maybe more dimmer clouds at the lower latitudes, maybe, and there's hardly any trend in the dimmer clouds.
Yeah, okay, well then.
So that would decrease the trend at the lower latitudes.
Okay, that's kind of a wimpy answer.
What? You promised me you wouldn't heckle me.
Okay, so why are the weak clouds showing no trend? Okay, that's the real question.
I don't know. When I look at these, I mean, I don't have it on here, but I can show you offline. If you look at the 30-year trend, you know, like this, but for the dim clouds, it is a complete straight line. There is no variation. They're scattered around. It looks more like the southern. It looks more like this. But there's no trend when you just have the dim clouds. And I should have shown an example of that. But okay.
One more from John, and then we'll go for coffee.
Well, let me speculate. One reason why the dim clouds might not have as much trend, maybe when you get to the really bright clouds, it takes a certain percentage of the larger particles, and that may be very severely limited by the water vapor or the temperature. You know, you have to, in order to grow those bigger particles, you either have to have a deeper saturation region or more water vapor.